We'll bring you this first excerpt from the 2015 Dayton Hamvention in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this rain report. As always, this year's Dayton Hamvention was chock full of educational, entertaining, and informative forums, 4 rooms of them over 3 days. For the next 11 months, we'll endeavor to bring you highlights of those forums that we hope will translate well to audio only. Many speakers today rely far too heavily on the visual component of such presentations. One presenter that was able to find a balance was Bill Curtis, WA8APB. Bill spoke on Hamnet Mesh, Consider the Possibilities. Reading from the Hamvention program, high-speed digital microwave mesh networks offer hams an exciting array of new communications possibilities supporting experimentation, remote sensing and control, and emergency communications. Mesh is the ultimate experimenter sandbox, serving as an ideal host for a wide variety of maker projects and applications. Let's hear what Bill had to say.
I'm going to give a very brief, and I mean brief, description of what mesh is, how it works, how it's deployed, and talk about a few of the applications and possibilities. So what's a mesh? A mesh is simply a wireless digital network made up of repeaters. We call them nodes. They operate on microwave frequencies, and their job is to transport digital data, just like the LAN that you might have in your school or factory or business. Not a whole lot of difference in terms of performance. They move high-speed digital data required for any kind of application that you might want or use that you would want to move data for. Each node is based on using, typically, either a Linksys wireless router or commercial equipment such as the Ubiquiti line of access points. We use these devices as software-defined radios. We flash them or upload them with mesh firmware, and when we do that, they become a digital ham repeater that's capable of passing and routing digital data. It also allows us to connect clients to the mesh network based on having a built-in DHCP server. Each node then becomes a licensed ham radio station. That station is self-advertising. You plug in the power, it's advertising your call letters. It's self-discovering. It's looking for another mesh transceiver to link to. As two receivers come within RF range, they bind together and become a network. It's self-configuring. It figures out which digital mode to use for the particular signal conditions that it has to deal with at the time. The system, as a network, becomes fault-tolerant. If one of those mesh nodes goes down in the middle of a transmission, no problem. The system will automatically route the traffic around the dead node, and it'll find its way to its destination station. The magic of making this happen is achieved through a routing protocol called OSLR, Optimized Link State Routing Protocol, and that's the magic of the firmware that we upload. These nodes, once they're in the mesh network, can be controlled by each other using passwords, and the other beauty of the mesh nodes is that typically they're very low power, so if you want to power them with a battery, you know, a typical little scooter battery will keep the thing running for a day, a motorcycle battery for 3 days, about 7 watts, usually half that much. It works well with solar as well. One significant point that I want to make here is that mesh nodes only talk to other mesh nodes. So you're not going to enter the mesh network with the Wi-Fi on your cell phone or the Wi-Fi on your laptop. You can do that if we attach a Wi-Fi access point and hardwire it into the mesh, but that's the only way that you'll get in. So what we have here is a mesh network. It's a wireless, wide-area digital network. It's operating in the microwave ham bands, and I've shown those here. Two of these overlap the Wi-Fi frequencies, which is both a blessing and a curse. We're talking about a broadband signal. Now, those of you that are into digital ham communications, perhaps you're using FL-Digi, we talk about broadband there, and you might be familiar with PSK31 at the narrow end of the spectrum, and maybe MSK63 at the high end, where you're a whole 3,000 hertz wide. Okay, here we're typically running 20 megahertz wide, and that allows us to transmit a very high-speed digital signal, typically 20 to 100 megabits per second wide. And we're doing that using standard TPC/IP protocol. In practice, a mesh network might look something like you see on the screen now. At the top of the screen, I've got a cluster of mesh nodes. They're all talking to each other, and I've hardwired to one of those a computer, an IPTV camera, and an analog telephone adapter, which allows me to use a plain old POTS telephone to plug into the mesh network. That cluster of mesh nodes at the top is also talking to a node on the top of a tower, which couples them to another mesh node at the bottom, another set of mesh stations or nodes talking to each other. Down there, I've got another telephone adapter with a telephone, a Raspberry Pi driving a widescreen TV monitor, a Wi-Fi access point, which allows access to the smartphone, and even an internet connection if I want to use that. So with this type of a configuration, video produced by the TV camera at the top can be viewed by the TV at the bottom. I can dial the IP address of the telephone at the top from the telephone at the bottom, and the phone at the top will ring. I can use the smartphone to view the video or to place calls as well. And if I choose to do so, I can propagate the internet across that mesh network. So how far apart can I put these nodes? Well, it kind of depends. How much power do I have? What's the antenna gain? What's the nature of the terrain? Do I have a clear line of sight? Do I have a clear Fresnel zone? If you look at the little picture there, the blue ellipse across the top is what they call the Fresnel zone. It's the area around the line of sight through which most of the RF energy of the transmitted signal is contained. You've got to keep that Fresnel zone clear of obstructions. If we allow those trees to penetrate the Fresnel zone, they're going to eat my signal. And those trees can eat 10 to 20 dB a piece of signal if I've got to pass through them. Atmospherics play a part of it. On a rainy day, if you've got poor conditions, the net will go down. Noise level is our biggest issue from co-channel Wi-Fi interference. Today we're running a great experiment that I'll mention. Our mesh network was working great this morning. If it's still working at 1 o'clock this afternoon, we will have achieved a miracle, because there will probably be about 6,000 noise sources, at least that, in the building by people walking in with Wi-Fi turned on their cell phones. Link quality is the big deal. You know, link quality we typically define as just the number of packets that make it through the system without having to be retransmitted. When we talk about mesh, we talk about daisy chaining modes, and you would think, well, I could daisy chain between here and Cincinnati. No, because every time you daisy chain, you lose a certain percentage of the packets, unless you've got perfect link quality, and you never do. So you get into this 80% of 40% of 30% of 60% situation, and all of a sudden you have a link that's absolutely worthless. So mesh is not made for long-haul connections by daisy chaining. A typical mesh system then might look something like this. We've got at each location a handful of mesh clusters that are talking to each other at ground level or near ground level, and then we've got a 2.4 gigahertz node at the top of the tower serving as a linking point for all those units on the ground. And then between towers, yeah, we've got 2.4 at the top of each tower, and the 2.4 could talk to each other, but that's typically going to be a weak link compared to what we can do in a much lower noise 5.8 gigahertz band, where we can have high gain antennas pointing at each other and have a very, very strong link joining the two mesh areas. And so we go hopping long distances, like 7 miles in Ohio over hilly terrain. We can get 7 mile links between towers, 70 foot ham towers, as long as we have a fairly clear line of sight. We're using 5.8 and high gain antennas and high power.
You're listening to our first forum excerpt from the 2015 Dayton Hamvention, featuring Bill Curtis, WA8APB, who is knee-deep in high-speed digital microwave mesh networks. We'll conclude Bill's talk in a moment. This is the RAIN Report, observing its 25th year in ham radio productions.
You're listening to the RAIN Report from www.therainreport.com.
If all else fails, we can tunnel. The mesh firmware now includes a tunneling capability, and so if we want to join the mesh hams in Columbus and those in Cleveland and those in Dayton, we can tunnel to make that happen. Shown here are some pictures of a typical mesh systems. In the upper left-hand corner is a typical tactical node. We've got our Linksys router, a little TV camera, a battery, and a laptop. That's all that it requires. If you want to go long haul, the next picture to it shows a parabolic antenna on a building top, the third tripod on the ground. These are typical of what you might do, and the pictures of the towers in the lower left are some of the 70-foot style mesh installations that we've got on ham towers and commercial towers in Dayton area. So consider the possibilities. What can you do with this thing? A mesh network, just like the network in your home, can serve as a host for computers, any kind of computer, Raspberry Pis, PCs, Macs, whatever you like. It will then support any kind of peer-to-peer communication utility. And peer-to-peer is becoming a big business. If you want peer-to-peer email, you can get it, because people, for some reason or other, don't trust their email in the cloud anymore. You can do peer-to-peer. You can handle all kinds of remote control applications and sensor systems. If you want to run Ham Radio Deluxe on mesh, you can do it. Any kind of computer-aided tuning, any kind of software-defined radio, you can control on the mesh network. You can have all kinds of server applications, file storage, web pages, relay chat. You can replicate servers. If you've got an emergency management agency that's got a server that they really value that they have on the internet, replicate it and put it on your mesh network, and when their power goes down and their server goes down, you've got that website available to them from your mesh site. You can stream video, cameras and trackers of all kinds. Voice over internet protocol telephones, Linphone, PBX Exchange. These are all systems that host conveniently on the mesh. GPS reporting. You can put in Wi-Fi access points if you want to and control it so that your served agencies or others can get into your mesh with their Wi-Fi cell phones. Lastly, if you want to, if you need to, you can propagate the internet. Other applications, ham radio projects, you know, any kind of SDR linking and control, contest logging systems. You want to have a motorcycle trip and link the motorcycles together on the trip, you can do it with mesh. You want to control the automation in your home, you can do it with mesh. If you want to provide public service in your area, parades and races, do video coverage along the parade route. Log the runners as they pass by with a sensor, transmit that information on your mesh network. You got a classroom where kids want to watch what happens in the woods at night and what the animals really do. You can set up a camera in the woods at night and bring it back to the school and put it in the classroom on mesh. Fairs and festivals, you got a sheriff that would really like to have some surveillance that he otherwise can't do. Set up cameras, put the cameras on the mesh, and put some monitors at the sheriff's control station, and he'll know what's going on. Anymore, our served agencies in the emergency AMCOM world really rely on internet communication. They want their online search and data and documents and databases. They want email and Skype and all the other things that we're using in commercial business today, the social media. And unfortunately, in many cases, we as hams are asking them to fill out radiogram forms. We might even help them fill out the radiogram forms so that we can put them on the traffic system. If you see anything wrong with that picture, you might want to think about mesh, because I think mesh can fill that gap. With mesh, we can restore network services when they go down. We can replicate those services and databases and online maps and anything else that they might find necessary. We can provide high-speed tactical communications. You want to support search and rescue, you want to support drop a line of mesh nodes as you walk into fighting a fire and so that the command post can see what the guys on the front lines are seeing, you can do that. You want to have surveillance on a chemical spill that no one wants to get close to, you can do that. You want to restore essential internet access during an emergency, you can do that too. A limited amount of internet access for key providers. There are some supporting organizations that are making this happen, the people that are developing the firmware for mesh, supporting its deployment, telling you how and why, and giving you application examples and providing forums. The key organization here is Broadband HamNet. There's a split off from that recently called Arden, and they're going down a slightly different technical development path, but again, supporting the same kind of system.
The voice of high-speed digital microwave mesh networks guru, Bill Curtis, WA8APB. One of a handful of presenters that spoke during the Tapper Forum at the 2015 Dayton Hamvention. For more background material on mesh technology, see the archive page on therainreport.com. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2015, Rain, all rights reserved. Now for Rain, founder and producer Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com, and via Twitter at #TheRainReport.